Good evening, good afternoon, or possibly even good morning, depending on the time it is you have tuned in to Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly. I'm your host and producer, and welcome to episode 9 already of season 7. How can that possibly be? This is the Poetry Podcast, which is available on Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, and iTunes. And as always, thank you so much to you, the listeners, for tuning in, because without you, it's just me talking into a microphone, which is connected to my computer, and pretending that people are tuning in. We are now already past the halfway point of season 7, and I haven't had a break yet, but it is coming right up, as this is the last episode before I take 2 weeks off, because me, myself, and I are heading up to Armagh, skipping all the way with a full bursary award to the John Hewitt International Summer School. And so far, every single person who I have met has told me that it will be an unforgettable experience. So therefore, I will need to pause, prepare, pose, and get poetic. So the podcast will be back to you in the first week of August. But for now, we still have today, and we have this fantastic new episode, and we are welcoming 8 guests, as one of my 5 guests is returning, not only as a returning stormer, but he's bringing with him his daughter and his granddaughter. So the podcast is not about being poetic, building a global community. It's also very much about family. Today on the show, we are heading off to the United Kingdom, the United States, to Northern Ireland, and that place that has such a huge part of my heart, Gay Paree. So why not settle down, ensure there's enough ginger beer, ginger wine, ginger ale, or ginger cake? This is Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly, and I hope you enjoy the show. Now, for my first guest on Eat the Storms today, I am delighted to welcome a Ghanaian poet whose debut collection has just been published by Arachne Press. She is a writer who is currently living and working in London, with a degree in English literature from the University of Cambridge, with a particular focus in Latin literature and visual culture. Her collection has been described as an intimate and unflinching collection, tracking the complex bind of mother-daughter relationships. I am honoured to welcome to Eat the Storms for the very first time the absolutely exceptional A.J. Akoto.
Thank you, Damien, for having me on Eat the Storms. My name is A.J. Akoto, and I'm a poet of Ghanaian descent, living and working in London. Today, I'll be reading from my debut poetry collection, Unmothered, published by Arachne Press. The collection was born from a need and desire to speak into the silence surrounding complex, difficult mother-daughter relationships. This first poem, called Creatrix, opens the collection. Creatrix. Mothers, first creators, try to shape us in their own image, or what they wish they were. Feel the dip of finger marks, moulding muscle and bone like clay. Our bodies belong not to us, but to the women who grew us, fed us, know us, enough to end us with a word. What terror and awe. And after all, aren't men afraid of God? As I wrote the collection, the poems tipped the power dynamic of the mother-daughter relationship. The awe and fear the mother figure inspires become relocated in the daughter figure, as in this next poem. A Test of Water. The sea is full of metal. This is bad. The sea sings over our oars. This too is bad. The passage of our boat is uncertain. What is certain? I should have told my daughter beforehand why she shouldn't listen to the song. that metal so light and strong in the sea isn't just strange but wrong. That things that sing to you are dangerous. I used to sing to her. But I've told her none of this. She dips her hand in the water, quick. When she snatches it back, her fingers are silver. They lift like air to point over my shoulder. I look back, see nothing, feel nothing except the terror of being her mother. I turn again to face her, gone. The water, for all its singing, took her silently. I drop my oar, search hard until I see a hand trying to break free, trapped by the water's surface. I plunge my hands in, pull until my arms are full of her as she tumbles back into the boat, transformed. So light she feels like a baby in my gleaming hands. So beautiful that now I'm afraid of her, as I'll come to find I'm right to be. What is clear in A Test of Water, and what became a central through line in Unmothered, is the love that underpins the mother-daughter relationship and the connection that remains despite separation. Longing. When I sleep, if I sleep, the dreamscape is full of longing. Not mine. Full of pleading for contact, connection, something more than silence, although it may be less than peace. If you would leave me alone, I would reach out to you, I tell the longing. And it twists itself up with my words until I wonder if it's mine, if I'm saying one thing that is true and feeling another thing which is also true. It is true that you can miss the idea of a person, that you can plead into an abyss that turns out to be a small dark room with a door with no handle. In a dream and in real life, a space changes itself according to your own sense of smallness. A small room becomes expansive, a big room a trap, and that is what love is like when you can't escape it. If I sleep and the longing arises, have I carried it there, or is it meeting me where it can? Dreams are a gathering place, after all. Is she meeting me where she can? As Unmothered reveals, so much of what we inherit is rooted in family history, the narratives we tell ourselves, which easily slide into myth, as in this next poem. Myth. I have made fortune fear me. I sweep fate away with my fisted hand. This is the myth, lie, that makes and remakes every pain in you. Grandmother and aunt too. Or perhaps it's only my mother seething. Each fate you try to fight fills in the edges of your spirit with resentments major, resentments minor. Because I have refused it, it cannot come to pass. Which is like saying you don't believe in ghosts, while the bedsheets shift themselves in a windowless room. Yet you also tell histories, stories, of prophecies, dreams, and warnings, sharp as truth. Which house collapsed in a flood? The ancestral home, of course. And who died when? In which omen-filled way? Death is never just death. Magnificent storyteller. Perhaps that is your fate, using myth to make and unmake yourself, reshape family history, misfortune. Although I won't tell you that, in case it gives you another gift to battle. Like you, I am a woman of this family. What myths, then, am I making? The final poem I'll read explores the freedom that stepping out of the role of daughterhood can bring. How the weight of that role, or any role, can be released by a series of undoings in order to fully stand in one's own power. Daughterhood. No one had ever told her the possibility of undaughterhood, or how the weight of mothers can be shrugged off, not like a coat, but like the rolling stone of a sepulchre, hard at first, then easier with the inertia, and then a last flick. No one had told her that she could be good and undutiful at the same time. Oh, she thought, if I ever have a daughter, I will tell her that she can be free of me. Perhaps that way she won't want to be. But if she does, I'll know the brightness of having told her that such a wonder exists. My thanks once more to Damien for his brilliant championing of poetry.
For my next guest, we're going all the way to the United States. Though while we may be going far, it's certainly not for a stranger, as this is a very welcomed returning guest, Stormer, who comes back every season and has been even a contributor to the Storms Journal thanks to his fantastic photography. Today, of course, we are focusing on his poetry. He is a poet, short story writer, historian, and a photographer, as previously mentioned. And his work has been appearing in places, anthologies, publications, and collections since 1965. But time, it appears, definitely has not slowed him down. His most recent works have been pictures, postcards, letters from Kelsey Books, published in 2020. And The River Singing from Workhouse Writers Press in 2019, and as you're going to hear today, Poems from Cancer, which is an annual series which raises funds for St. Baldrick's Foundation and has been on the go since 2014. Today, making what I believe is his sixth, if not his seventh appearance on the podcast, this is the incomparable Leonard Lund.
Hello, everyone. My name's Leonard Lund, coming to you as usual from just outside Chicago. My offerings for you this time around are four poems from April's fundraiser for the St. Baldrick's Foundation, Poetry Against Cancer 2023. It was a cool day, unseasonably so. Monotonous gray skies, but no rain. Just a damp fog creating shadows at a distance, wraiths becoming people walking about their errands, hatted and overcoated, some with gloves or scarves thickly knitted with love and patience, while wet leaves slid across the pavement before the breeze, some hard and skittering like creatures in a dream, some piling for warmth in the gutter, around bench legs, our feet as we sat on the bench. You with your chin in one hand, the other on my arm while I held an umbrella over us and the book we read together. Sandberg when we were in Chicago. Atwood in Toronto. Bourget in our imagination when we were apart for the day or week, but still, yes, still connected. Like a forest sharing roots while dreaming of the stars together. L'on y dansait tous en rond. The children danced in fairy tales, holding hands to form a singing circle. They danced at Stonehenge, perhaps. We know they danced in the plague, sang around a frog in Stalingrad, on a hilltop overlooking Budapest. I remember dancing on the playground when holding hands with a girl was new, and later when it meant the world. That world has changed again, but not to fairy tales or first crushes. The merry songs have become fewer. Now the children hold hands, silent, crouched behind a circle of desks, waiting for the songs of guns to stop. The tree still stands, towards a corner of the yard, making an odd triangle with house and garage. Our children have grown to be the adults we like to think they saw in us, but better. Their children, in turn, have done the same. All these families close, even across distances. The weathered oaken plank still hangs suspended by by the thick sisal. A young child's simple swing, no longer used. Look closely at it. See the shadows of children in clear memories. After the act. More than the death of a beautiful instrument, carefully crafted by time, by hands and eyes, a heart and brain imagining the notes that would rise to praise a moment repeatedly. More than the passing interest of a common city rat searching, trying the taste of anything too slow or too still to escape. The almost silent, almost empty cobblestones that curve away to exit, to disappear, stage left. More than anything to occur in the remnants of this evening as it passes from star rise into night to following sunrise, a heart has been shattered by the shuttering of a window overlooking a balladeer. Amore has turned unrequited. Thank you all.
My next guest on the show today takes us to Belfast in Northern Ireland. This is for a first-time guest to Eat the Storms, and a guest who will be sharing poems from her collection Sanctuary, There Must Be Somewhere, which was published by Saren Books just last year. She is an award-winning producer in TV and film, and splits her time between Ballycastle and Cardiff in Wales, and has poetry published in many different magazines and journals. She won the first prize for poetry in the inaugural Linenhall Ulster Scots Writing Competition in 2021, and in 2020, Saren Books published her short story collection, A City Burning, which was shortlisted for the Edge Hill Short Story Prize. Currently editing a prose poetry hybrid on Place and Displacement. Today, she will be sharing poems from that collection last year, Sanctuary, There Must Be Somewhere. I am so pleased to hand you over to the wonderful Angela Graham.
I'm Angela Graham, and thank you to Damien Donnelly for this opportunity to share some of my poems in the Eat the Storms podcast. I'm going to read some from my collection Sanctuary, There Must Be Somewhere, which was published exactly a year ago by Saren Books. I decided to design the collection as a kind of sanctuary, a hosting space, and I did this by seeking two poets in Wales and two in Northern Ireland, because I live in both places, who have some expertise in an area of sanctuary. So I found in Northern Ireland the Hungarian poet Cilla Toldy and the Italian Viviana Fiorentino, and in Wales, Welshman Phil Cope and Mahjar from Iran. Each of these four poets agreed to write one poem each in collaboration with me. That's a challenging thing to do because it allows another person into the creative process, but it proved to be a very happy experience. The bulk of the collection is by me. And my mentor for this collection, Glenn Wilson, who's from Portadown, also contributes a poem. The book looks at sanctuary under five headings or types. Sanctuary in another person, sanctuary in the divine or the numinous, and the planet itself as a sanctuary for humanity, and then sanctuary in the context of population seeking safety, and sanctuary of the self within the body. So I'd like to start by reading a poem which is about something that I'm sure we all remember, August 2021, the chaos of the evacuations of people from Kabul. Since the evacuations from Kabul, must sanctuary now imply its opposite? The open sewer beside the airport gate, the foreigner's pragmatic rush to quit, the loophole shrunk by each departing state. The frenzied sea of documents held high to prove the right to have a promise kept. A worthless currency, they prove a lie. expedient, well meant, swiftly sidestepped. Is there a scathing truth we have to face that outside every sanctuary there's a hell where howling crowds who crave the sacred space clamour to join the saved? Prison cell and sanctuary. Keys turn, locks click, bolts slide. But only one can open from inside. In preparing the collection, I met a lot of people who had been obliged to go into exile, and this poem gives voice to one of them. Consider, why do you still call me refugee? Do you want me to be forever fleeing? I have fled. Now I am here, trying to keep both feet on the ground and find my balance. Sometimes I feel I have two hearts. One, the first created, taut as a drumskin in my chest, trembles at far-off shifts of energy in the fault lines of the home I left. The other has grown itself around the first, as lymph spreads on the surface of a wound, as albumen, fragile, tremulous, helps a new life mesh itself together somehow. I was a refugee. Now I am here, where I have to do so much explaining, where I have to live so much on your terms, and I am growing this second heart as bravely as I can. Where I came from will always be where I come from. And now I come from, and so let me be here. I think we have to be clear-eyed about sanctuary, not sentimental. We have to see the world as it is. The last two poems in the collection I see as a kind of pair. The one I'm going to start with gives the collection its subtitle, Sanctuary, There Must Be Somewhere. There must be somewhere that is safe from violation. Childhood, being son or daughter, pregnancy, old age, infirmity, none of these. The corridors of hospitals, asylums, refuges, places we thought were sacrosanct, are roamed by predators. And though the innocent fox has his earth and the birds of the air their nests, we are unhoming ourselves and ravaging even our own minds. Yet we hope for sanctuary, a nook out of the wind, shelter in the cutch of someone's overcoat, a harbouring gaze, if nothing else. I often think about that song, The Parting Glass. The last toast raised, the one who has to leave, steps out across the threshold into the turbulent night. That brilliant room where the worst of him was known, forgiven, shouldered, remains his compass, carried always. Nowhere is safe. We know that. And we know that somewhere is, because we've been there irrefutably, and we can find it, open its door, welcome one another in. The last poem in the collection is called Home. As I spoke, I realised that he was listening, that he had opened up some room inside himself, and there was the hallway beckoning me towards a door giving onto a sunlit living space that I could enter, my burden in my arms. And when I placed it on his table, we would, together, loosen its bonds, consider it quietly. What we were talking of, I don't remember now, but that he, on his threshold, stood aside to let me in, that has never left me. He gave me living proof that this is how we're meant to be, capable of choosing to welcome someone in. And that when that person, does the same for us. He is our shelter. We are a home for one another. And this holds true for everyone. When I started work on the collection, I suppose I thought of sanctuary in terms of place. A sanctuary was a building or a safe room. And I learned that, yes, it can be those things, but perhaps more importantly, we can be a sanctuary for each other. We can be people of sanctuary.
Now, from Northern Ireland and Wales, we are staying in the United Kingdom and heading to England for my next guest on the show today, who very graciously is bringing with him not only his daughter, but also his granddaughter. And today, they are going to be sharing pieces from their collaboration, Headspace, which is currently available on Amazon, or Like a Blot from the Blue. And if Like a Blot from the Blue sounds familiar, it's because I was honoured to be their featured guest just last month. It is a fantastic open mic Zoom show with an astounding array of writers joining in from all around the world. This artist himself has work appearing in over 70 different publications in places like China, India, the United States, Canada, as well as the United Kingdom. He is a filmmaker, producer, publisher, and a collaborative artist. And so today, joining the exceptional Finn Hall is his daughter, Janine Ray, and his granddaughter, Aria Ray. This is their Headspace.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Damien, for having me back on Eat the Storms. It's a privilege indeed. My name's Finn Hall. I come from Newport-Sligo in the northeast of Scotland. I'm going to be reading tonight a couple of poems from my newest collection, which is called Headspace, and it's available either from Amazon or from Like a Blot from the Blue at gmail.com. What's different about this is a book that I share the writing honours with my daughter Janine, who's got to be reading a poem or two also, and my 15-year-old granddaughter Aria. And she's reading one of hers as well. Thank you.
Consolation in your desolation, the twists and turns of the truth, you can't brush off like you did in your youth, alone with your black dog, walking, solitary, not talking.
Today I will see who I am, who I want to remain. But the mirror is cloudy, the cloth nugatory. So I try to let my true self be espied. It's so very futile. I'm fading away. You can't see me go. You didn't see me stay. Worthless, false, addicted but trying. Always going, still trying. We will see me. Hear me. Patience.
I'm not going anywhere. The silent tears falling on my deaf ears. But I know they're there, hiding beneath the surface, blocking up your ducts, blocking up your soul, keeping you from feeling whole, keeping you to yourself, keeping you within, without. Without a doubt, still close to me, and even though your words remain distant and slow to enter the world, I welcome the occasion I hear them.
Solitude is not what this is. It brings warmth, hope, and guilt. The door is opening, the mirror clearing. The tears that are hidden are obvious. It's helping. The fact there is burden, not just for one. No secrets, no rush. A beacon. Visibility, just there, slight, but there. The journey towards it through the mirror, when possible. Not as hard as before. Are we all crazy here? The ink that is drawn in skin once so clear. A pain but a meaning. A clarity of ways. A start. A clock rewound to mark the seconds once more. And an inkling of the voice. Smile and flush for this life. It's not over. but it's less than it was. I am heard.
I'll walk with you and talk with you, but only when you need me to.
Thank you. Power by Janine Ray. We give them the power that they use to live the lives they wish as we mere ones go, without having to choose between the most needed of things. Do we nourish or do we stay warm? Our souls are bereft, shriveling in the husks with which we are becoming, while they lord over from pillars that we are ungraciously spat on from, the ones we placed them upon. The lies and deceit flow unbidden and unasked for, washing over to maintain some kind of fake glamour, but some are all seeing and we all live it. Will they feel empathy as they murder and destroy innocents, the undeserving reduced from proud people to meek pleading charities? Hatred and greed from those that have plenty, they flaunt and deceive from each spew-infested orifice, leech and dispose again and again, the lesser of humanity's productions, the demons, the crustaceans from which we will never be free. Can we be? Or will those blinded by the debt trace they cast continue to build the pillars higher as if building for deities, where in reality they are of such diminutive stature they require us to believe and not dispute, to remain in awe and forgo our basic rights to feed the hunger of the fat political monster? Wretched. Wretched beauty in all forms, vain and uncompromising, withhold the eye of the beholder blinded by virtue, the one lonely blossom to be left stained, saddened and valued by none, honesty disregarded and blasphemed, wretched beauty in solitude, unfolding wings of splendour, hatred and envy. Heal, heal me, she said as she was blindly led. Save me, she cried as to her face she was lied. Love me, she sobbed as her energy was robbed. What now, she implored as hope walked out the door. I still beat, whispered heart, as in its own form of art.
In the Blink of an Eye by Ariero. In the blink of an eye, it's all gone. In the blink of an eye, they don't feel it. In the blink of an eye, they change. In the blink of an eye, it's all gone. In the blink of an eye, it's safe. In the blink of an eye, you're free. In the blink of an eye, you're gone. They start to love you. They start to care. A single teardrop. They drop no more. They're over it. In the blink of an eye, you're forgotten.
Now, my final guest on Eat the Storms today is a returning guest, but this time she is returning to celebrate our collection of the week, which is her debut pamphlet, which has just been published by the wonderful Nine Pens Press. It's called Not Quite an Ocean. She is a British Mauritian poet, writer, workshop teacher, and a two-time Pushcart Prize nominee, and today you're about to hear why. She lives in Paris, where of course my heart lies, with her family and two cats, where she runs a variety of different businesses, writes a variety of different things, all in a variety of different languages, and all under a variety of different names. Her work has appeared in various publications and anthologies across the United Kingdom, the United States, Australia, Mexico, and the Middle East. The last time she was on Eat the Storms, it was back in episode 14 of season 3. She was reading from her debut full collection, Caloncito, Poems on Love, Loss e Otras Locuras, which you can still get on Amazon. But for today, we're focusing on Not Quite an Ocean, her new Nine Pens Press debut chapbook. This is the always sensational Elizabeth M. Castillo.
Hi Damien. Hi to all your listeners. It is such a pleasure to be back with you today. This is Elizabeth M. Castillo. I'm back with some fresh poems from my brand new poetry pamphlet, Not Quite an Ocean, out with Nine Pens Press. You can find all the details for that on my website or on my social media at EMC Writes Poetry. The my new pamphlet is about womanhood, the ocean, the environment, the body, changes in the body, but especially about self-love with a little bit of feminine rage, because, I mean, why not? The first poem I'd like to read to you today is a poem that sort of encapsulates those last two things, and it's called To Be Woman. To be woman is to be pieces, is to be needed, is to be blamed, deserving at all times. To be woman is not to be anything. To be woman is to be everything, all things bound together, and, if you can manage it, just that little bit more. To be woman is to be pitted, teeth bared, taut muscle, sharp claws, brawling, raving, hungry, backs against the wall. To be woman is body dysfunction, is body misunderstood, is body underfunded, uninsured, mystery illness, ovarian taxation, reproductive discrimination, persecution, enshrined in law. To be woman is nurturing. Provision is scheming, obsession, is wanton, waiting, abandon. A forest in an acorn, an ocean in a person. This next poem is one of my favorites from the collection. I love it because I love the motivation behind my writing it, but I also love it in that if I were to come across it in another book, I think it's the sort of poem that would really be very meaningful to me. And to be honest, I think that most people, definitely, I would say most women, will be able to relate on some level. And it's called Body, I Love You. Body, I love you. Where you are, when you are, I am safe inside you, body. When you are a cellar, when you are a door, when you are a vehicle, like that second-hand Citroën with its littered floor, paint scratched from the corners I didn't quite clear, from concrete barriers I never knew were there until it was too late. Body, I love you, when you cling to walls like moss, as a fruiting tree, as a crack in the glass, wolf-proud, urchin shy. Body, forgive me for hardening my hear against you, for dismissing your aching cries, your silent grieving, always so busy folding you up, busy tucking you in. Body, body, you are marvellous. See how the filth washes right out of you? How none of it ever really touched you? See, if I tilt my head, body, you are still upright. Body, you're no thing to be hidden. Body, I know you are mostly salt and water. You are your very own equator. You were meant for the sun. I've been a fool, body, forgive me, hemmed discontent into each of your sinews, tucked the world and its worries in between each vertebrae, filled your liver with anguish, let your uterus fester with regret. Body, I believe you. I believe you. Heart, take my allegiance. Feet, I will turn you loose onto the ground you long to feel beneath you. Eyes, I will follow you. Obedient, like a lamb. Body, I love you. I set love aside for you. You are safe inside me, body. When you are, where you are. Body, I love you. Now, as I mentioned before, this short pamphlet is about the environment, but that was not intentionally so. It was only when I came back to the manuscript that I realized that a lot of my poems were dealing with the ocean and the earth and its violation and its abuse. And I mean, it's not rocket science to see the obvious parallels between the experience of womanhood and the experience of the earth at this point in history. And one of the poems that I think, although it was written as a metaphor, is quite representative of that, is this one that is called Who Will Hold the Ocean? Who will hold the ocean? Who will comfort her in her rage? Whose arms could wrap across the earth? Whose legs wouldn't buckle under her constant motion? Who could see past her belly swollen with oil and regret? the great sutures that hold her together in her depth? Who will breathe life into her wearied sinews, shore up the arms that hold the continents apart? Who will tell her she is condemned to hunger? Of the slander spoken by the rivers and streams, who will thank her for her giving, her constant giving? Who will teach her that the darkest parts of her body are where the creatures are the most boneless and bright? Who will dismantle the great iron skeletons of conquest that lie rotting, eating away at her throat and back teeth? Who will whisper eulogies to her salt, to her sand? Who will defy the moon and the white tyranny he holds over her? Who will hold up her glaciers fractal by fractal until she is spent? Who will comfort the ocean? Who will hold her ends in place? And the last poem I'd like to share with you is in fact the closing poem of my pamphlet. And it's an after poem written after the wonderful, fabulous Mary Ford Neal, Scottish poet and author of Dawning and Relativism. I adore her work. And this poem, What I Like, is a spin on one of her poems. In her poem, she's talking to a lover and describing what she likes. But in my poem, I've taken it to a little bit more of a personal level. And to be honest, I wish this poem on all of my readers and anybody who comes across it. What I Like, after Mary Ford Neal. Tell me what you like, she says, her eyes wide, her mouth in earnest. Tell me what you like. Her voice trembling with youth and confidence wholly her own, pressed against me, yet there are entire oceans between us. Very well, I'll tell you what I like. I like myself. I like who I am. I like the books that I read and the rhythm of my choices. I like my mind, the ideas that form and flutter when I'm in bed or in the bath. I like the kindness I have wrought, especially when the recipient was undeserving. I like the fullness of my hips and the softness of my belly and the way my shadow waxes and wanes with the tide. I don't like all my mistakes, but I like what I have learned from them. I like my gold jewelry and my octopus wall art. I like my face and my humour. My hand when it's laced together with my husband's and my voice when it's coaxing calm into the heart of a child. I like my understanding of the world and my way with plants and people. I like my freckles and my brown skin, especially when I'm underwater. I like speaking my languages. I like who I have become. I like who you will become. And that's it for me. Thanks once again for inviting me on the podcast, Damien. It's always a pleasure to be with you and be part of all the amazing work you're doing now with the Storms Journal as well. If you like those poems, you can go to my website, ElizabethMCastillo.net, or follow me on social media at EMC Writes Poetry and check out my new pamphlet out with Nine Pens Press, Not Quite an Ocean.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Merci beaucoup. And with Elizabeth, it means that we have reached the end of our guests on today's show. So that leaves me with just enough time to share with you two poems. I'm going to leave you with two poems that I wrote last November while I was staying at the exceptional Tyrone Guthrie Centre in County Monaghan. The first poem was inspired by a red lamp that sat on the table of my chalet. And it ends up in Paris. So it's a little nod to Elizabeth and her current location. And the second poem is about a dog which triggered a memory of childhood. The dog I met on my first night when I was back at the Tyrone Guthrie Centre, introducing myself to the marvellous lake there. And so the first poem is called All I Think About When I See the Red Lamp. the pointless porcelain stingle stiletto in scarlet. Too big for a doll, too small to be anything substantial. A rouged birthday present from me to you. When you were 45 and I hadn't learned the importance of being anything. Speaking of birthdays, the blushed velvet hat you wore on your 40th, over a grey dress I only remember because there's a photograph of it somewhere, in a sealed album that keeps the things we've lost bound together in one place. The vermilion paint I splashed across my 4-bedroom walls at 17. When wallpaper no longer attracted attention and I wanted to be as angry as Tory, hair blazing, roaring. There can be little earthquakes far from tectonic plates. The red velvet waistcoat your fingers caressed in Dublin. On the stairs of the George and the poppered stench of the block in the 90s, as I found my way in, only a day before you tied the noose that would take you so far out. Those small red briefs you turned me onto in the north of Amsterdam, on the far side of Het Ei, on the safe side of a mosquito net you thought would keep you safe from all those things that wanted to bite. Carmine carpet in the bedroom of the green windmill in Paris, second time around, where he told me of the scorched burgundy stones of his hometown. My tongue, tracing a heart inked below his shoulder, tasting of me, of you, and all those things I still haven't learned how to be. And that final poem is called After the Light Comes the Reflections. I arrive late, but start out early, eager for the lake to know my form before it falls to shadow. It is deeper than I remember. Even the jetty has been forgotten. We've been parched, though the stage has been set for our drowning. I turn back to the presence of a past fear. Bright dog runs out through dark night, each of us startled by the other. Boat latecomers to this lake that only knows us as shadow. In the distance between dog and man, I'm 12 again. Having cleared the yard and its bullies, now facing the final climb. The black dog in daylight, in the nightmare between school and the dream of what a home should be. He can smell my fear. Realizes I only know how to run. I arrive late, but find an early beginning, still panting, and me still running. Well, I hope you've had a good evening, good afternoon, or even a good morning with us, as we have now reached the end of Eat the Storm, the poetry podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, whether that has been on Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, or iTunes. By tuning in, it means that you are the ones who are keeping this show going, so thank you so much. And of course, a huge thank you to my absolutely sensational stars of today's show. They have been Elizabeth M. Castillo and her collection of the week, Not Quite an Ocean, just published by Nine Pens Press. Leonard Lund, all the way from the United States, and today he was sharing with us his collection, Poems Against Cancer. We had Angela Graham from Belfast, who was sharing her collection published by Seren Books last year called Sanctuary, There Must Be Somewhere. The incredible A.J. Akoto, whose debut collection, Unmothered, was just published by Arachne Press, and the family collaboration that made Headspace, which was Finn Hall, his daughter Janine Ray, and his granddaughter Aria Ray. For full details and all of my guests today, head on over as usual to the website www.eatthestorms.com. Click on the podcast section called Listen to the Podcast, and there you will find a blog post for every episode. This was episode 9, season 8, and in that blog post you will find photos, bios, social media handles, places to go to buy all the amazing collections you've heard on today's show, not only to fill your bookstores, but to let your mind indulge in the greatness. As I said, this is the final episode for 2 weeks. I am off to the incredible John Hewitt International Summer School in Armagh next Sunday. It kicks off on the 24th of July. There is a sensational lineup, so go check out their website. There's a link, of course, in today's blog post. And get your ticket and come along and celebrate with me. Now, I'm also looking forward to a little break, but I feel I'm leaving on a high, as just this week, the wonderful Liz Skeen of Tourist Press announced that she will be publishing my second full poetry collection, Back From Away, which will arrive in spring 2024, and I feel like I could not be in better hands. And this is also the week I got an acceptance from a gloriously, relatively new journal that just sprang up here in Ireland. Their first issue was absolutely sensational, and I am over the moon to get to be a contributor in their second issue. More on that coming soon. And of course, in between all of that, myself and Nitti Kassa are working our way through the long list for the submissions that you sent us all in for the Storms, our printed journal of poetry, prose and visual arts. We are trying to perfect the contents for issue 3. We have about another 2 or 3 weeks left before we get together to combine, converge and decide on the final lineup. And I also got word this week that a digital artist, a fantastic visual digital artist whose work I have been absolutely coveting on Instagram, has agreed to be our featured artist. More details on that coming, but it really feels like everything is aligning perfectly. So that's it from me. Please look after yourselves, take care of yourselves, head on over to the website, buy some of the amazing collections that you've heard today. You will not be disappointed. You know what they're like. You know they're exceptional. I feel so lucky to be a part of this Earth Space and to get to share it with them. Until next time, grab yourself a pen, a pencil, a paintbrush, go out there and paint yourself into the world. You know that inside us all, we have something bursting to get out. My name has been Damien B. Donnelly. This has been Eat the Storms. I'll see you again in August. But until then, stay bloody poetic!
Oh, thank you.